would you talk a little bit about what you think the chances of a veto override on the tax bill look like from your body or from your perspective or from the perspective of your caucus? And similarly, do you think that there will be any serious effort to attempt to override any of the other bills that the governor vetoed? And so let me start. I'll just put my finger down on my list. Ron Hyland, if we could just start with you, and then we'll go to Mike Dodson after Ron.
Thank you for the question. As you clearly stated, we had a vote of 81. The phone calls have been going on and the arm twisting has begun to try to get those votes changed, the ones that voted against it. I am, you know, I hate to admit this, but I agree with Tom that there are some parts of that need to be looked at a little bit further. So I think there will be some discussion and possibly some changes in that bill. And I think with some minor changes that we can get it passed easily. It may be one of the first items we take up because of the closeness on the voting. There is talk that we will bring in one of our members who's been hospitalized the entire session, whether in a wheelchair or whatever, but I think that will be lined up so that he will only have to be there for one day. And so that vote will take place when he shows up. It's a sad situation, but you know, we get to this point in the session, every vote counts, and extraordinary things happen at some times. I think the chances are pretty good that one will be overridden, but there is a possibility that to get some of those votes, there may be some minor changes. And I think the Senate will have to let their views known on that over on the House side. And those things take place this time of year. There will be hallway talk and those things are needed, and that's part of the process. And I look forward to it, actually.
Thank you. Representative Dodson, and then we'll go to Sidney Carlin after Representative Dodson.
You know, I think a lot of our views are pretty much aligned on this. I think if I recall, we had several of these votes where two people were absent. So we have to figure that also in the equation of 81. Just like Ron, get a lot of phone calls making sure we're either subtly on board or if we haven't been on board, to get on board. But I think, quite frankly, we owe it to everybody to see kind of what changes are viable so that the final bill that we see is worth voting on. There are some good things in there, and there are some things that I think Ron and I have discussed about, one of them being the limit on or the threshold for internet sales tax, $100,000. And when the governor did this, it was zero. And, you know, when you make a bill, you not only have to determine what's appropriate, but you also want to make sure that you don't engender some kind of a lawsuit later on. I think the states that went before us had $100,000. And even though that's somewhat a disadvantage for some of our local small businesses, it may be the one that can be sustained over the long term. So I'm kind of in the same place Ron and Tom are on this.
Thank you. Representative Carlin, and then we'll follow up with Senator Hawk.
Thank you. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
I too have, there were things in that I supported, and it was not hard for me to vote against that bill because of the corporate taxes. It's my understanding that go to zero on corporate taxes that come back from overseas. I don't know the particulars on the corporate tax schedule, but I think that corporations need to pay their fair share. And in this case, it was described as not so. I do think that we should decouple and allow people in Kansas to itemize their deductions, which that is a big issue for me personally. As a single person, it's a lot different than you're married. So those changes, and also I believe that we need to, I had another one. Anyway, I did like the bill except for the guilty portion of it. And then there was the $360 million that comes in from the double benefits for businesses because of being able to deduct their losses in business after not having to pay taxes on their COVID money, as I understand it. When we had the tax repeal bill in 2017, we had some time and we were able to get groups together, started by the Women's Caucus, but to actually go through the bill item by item so that we could get a bill passed because we all wanted to do it. This bill was kind of brought to us, and it's been brought to us before, this provision about the corporations. But this one had a little more to it, so it was more tempting. So we need a little time with that bill. It was kind of rushed again. Also, I believe the governor is going to either offer a substitute bill or try to negotiate that before we come back for the rest of the session. She really is interested in trying to raise the standard deduction for people and allow some of the things that benefit our citizens. So I don't know what the likelihood of anything being overridden is. It's all politics at this point. So
thank you, Representative Carlin. Senator Hawk, any final thoughts on that? You mentioned it a little bit in your update. Oh, yeah. You're muted. There you go.
I think if our delegation was in charge, we could take care of this and we could find that middle ground. It's the other people we have to worry about. I think we're probably the least political of any delegation out there. And certainly the larger the delegation, probably the more political. And it is what Representative Carlin said, it becomes a political thing in terms of whether or not the speaker, the president, majority and minority leaders can negotiate some kind of settlement. I would like to think that we would support the veto, but that we would come back and have, as Ron said, tweaked or more manageable. That the payroll protection thing that Congress did, the IRS said you couldn't double dip that. That's a $360 million hole in the budget. And these are businesses that got the loans and then loan forgiveness, and then they get to deduct their expenses. I sure wished I still had my photography business. I had lots of expenses and little income many years, and to be able to get a windfall, as I know some business have. And at the same time, I want our businesses to survive. And so I don't think we have to give people a double dip on that. I think a single dip is probably the fairest way to go. And so that's one thing that will hurt us in the next three budget years, not just this year. We talked about the guilty part, and there's some things in there that just give some corporate breaks that maybe are a little beyond the pale. And I think if we looked at that, what we really need to focus on are our ordinary citizens and our middle class people that are trying to keep their jobs and their businesses alive. And I think if we decoupled, that would be a good faith effort, and that could be good middle ground. There's that market facilitator somebody brought up, and I don't know if I care if it's 100,000 limit or no limit, but let's just agree on it and make sure that the Amazons and the companies that are taking away our Main Street businesses are paying their fair share of taxes and giving our storefronts an opportunity to compete. And I think those are the things that are really at stake. So if we take the politics out of it and just think about good policy, I think there's a lot of good middle ground there. And I'm gonna be an optimist till the day is done that we're gonna find that. So some of the other ones, one of my colleagues in the House, my first year, I said, why is this so tough? Why are people so acrimonious and there's so much conflict? And she looked at me and said, Representative Hawk, this is not Sunday school. And so it isn't Sunday school, but I think we all have good intentions. And if we come together with that, my guess is two or three of the bills will be overridden. And hopefully we'll have time to either come back next year and get better policy or focus on the big picture things that really are going to make a difference in our economic recovery.
Thank you very much. The next question has to do with redistricting. And so many of you were around when we did this 10 years ago in some form or fashion, whether you're at the city level or in the legislature. Given the recently released census data and the amendment to include military and students in state level redistricting, will the Manhattan area be gaining an additional House or Senate seat in the state legislature? That's a great question. I know that it's a tough question, and we'll probably start looking at that a little bit later this summer. Maybe if we could start with Representative Dodson on the question about redistricting, and then we'll go back to Senator Hawk. We're going to mix this up a little, and then Representative Carlin, and finish up with Representative Hyland.
Thanks. My answer will be very short, because the only thing I know about redistricting is I've talked to one of the representatives that's been asked to set up the committee, and I've talked to leadership about this a little bit. But as you said, the thing that will impact us here locally is the inclusion of the Kansas State University students. You know, in the past, they were voting from basically where they grew up or where their parents lived. And this at least gives the opportunity for them to be counted here with us in Manhattan. The same goes for the residents that live here, probably about 6,000 from Fort Riley. But other than that, you know, the process is always messy. If you look at the history of gerrymandering and some of the oddball shapes that exist across the United States and some states where things are certainly not square or even symmetric, they're designed with what you might call an evil intent. So I think the work has to be thoroughly examined as it begins to emerge from the committee that will establish this. And there's been discussion in the past, you know, how's this committee even put together? So with that, I think I'll turn it over to the next speaker. These folks have been here much longer than I have and kind of know how it works. But, you know, that's just my initial observation from my standpoint and talking to just a few folks that are starting on the committee.
Thank you. Senator Hawk, and then we'll go to Representative Hyland and conclude with Representative Carlin.
Oops, I was unmuted, sorry. I think what's likely to happen, although I don't know that we can predict what kinds of gamesmanship for political reasons. And if there's too much gamesmanship in politics, it's going to go to the court to do. To me, what I think is more likely to happen in Manhattan and Riley County is our Senate district gets smaller geographically. And my guess is it might even just be a Riley County Senate district, or certainly not. I would doubt that it would take in as much of Clay County and Geary County because of counting the K-State students and the Fort Riley people. In terms of political gamesmanship, if you look at how close some of our races were, mine in particular, I don't know if anybody has anything to gain particularly by taking out what I think is Riley County and Manhattan's community of interest, which is pretty clear in terms of what we've always said. It's K-State and our local businesses in Fort Riley, and trying to make sure that we advocate and represent those key interests. So I think we might be, even if there's funny business, I think we might be exempt in seeing much change in either our Senate or House district, other than the geography of it getting a little smaller.
Thank you. Representative Hyland, do you think you'll still be representing some Manhattan area folks next election cycle?
That's an excellent question. It's hard to tell. The last redistricting resulted in this funky arrangement that we have now. And my district in particular is really strange. I've got this block. I can't see. There we go. And it went to the courts. I sought the counsel of Michael Neal, former speaker, and he has gone through three of these. And his advice to me was protect everybody that's an incumbent right now. And if you do that and draw the line so that they are secure, then it should go real well in both the House and the Senate, and the governor will sign it. Now, Tom alluded to the fact to be some monkey business, and I'm sure there'll be some of that tried. But if we put level heads on the committee, I think we can get around that. In 2012, when they published that on Friday, I was chair of the county and I worked with Pott County chair. We looked for somebody because they drew all three of our representatives out. And as a result of that, it was a three-way race. I won. Anyway, that's how I got in. And then at that, changes we'll see. I think because of the population growth between Wamego and Manhattan, it won't be this time, but I would say by the next election, that will be a representative district of its own. That's how fast it's growing, which means my district right now, it's really strange in that I have five senators that I have to deal with. And that's more than anybody should have to deal with. Anyway.
I resemble that remark.
Oh, by the way, thank you for your kind remarks before, Tom. I appreciate that. But I don't know. I think we should take Michael Neal's recommendations to heart and to the two committees, the House and Senate committees, and say, look, protect everybody that's here now, and we'll work out the details on the little lines drawn, but not to the point where anybody is excluded. I don't think we need to be in that business. That's my opinion.
Thank you, Representative Hyland. Representative Carlin, any thoughts about redistricting? There you go.
There I am. I came up a different way. I tried to get on that committee. I wasn't chosen. I was really disappointed in that because I really do have ideas, but I'm just going to have to try to get those into committee members. I don't know what our population growth has been in Riley County. I apologize for that. Maybe somebody can briefly tell me, but I do know Pott County is growing. In the last census, I picked up a little bit of Pott County. There were two houses, both vacant. So, I could get some of Pott County this next time. But we've had growth to the northwest too. So I don't know. I think it's been interesting for us to have the Clay County people, such as Susie and Tom, this representing. I think it's good for this area to have that region as a part of us. I think we can help each other's economy by being working together that way. So I hope that doesn't change, but I thought we would get a member last time and we didn't. So I don't know. Sorry, no prediction.
Excellent. Thank you for that answer. Several of you talked a little bit about incentives, economic development incentives. Star bonds were renewed. We did some work that were recommendations of the framework for growth on HPIP and Kit Kerr decoupling funds and angel investors. Does the legislature view the framework for growth as a bipartisan effort? And if so, what does the legislature consider to be the priority framework for growth effort for 2021 and 2022. So the next legislative session, essentially. And I'll repeat that. Sydney, I think we'll start with you. Let me repeat the question. Does the legislature view the framework for growth as a bipartisan effort? And if so, what does the legislature consider to be the priority framework for growth effort for the 2022 legislative session? So Representative Carlin, we'll start with you, and then we will go, I've gotten out of order because I was trying to keep track. We'll go to Representative Hyland after you.
Well, I do think that it is a bipartisan effort, and I hope that others feel that way. I believe the leadership that we've seen already in the economic development arena has been really good. The new things that have come about, the 6 or 8 new corporations that have developed and come into Kansas in the last year, it's been phenomenal growth, and it's been a real big effort that the Commerce Department has tried very hard to include all areas of the state. There's been something for every portion of the state. I appreciate what they've done in Southeast Kansas and Western Kansas and Northeast Kansas. And, you know, it's so I think that I'm not sure what your question is really, but the priority for growth, I think one of the things, and I'm not that familiar with this plan, but I know that we're trying to get the broadband so that people can work from home wherever they are. And that will really be a real boost to not only education, but growth in communities where businesses can participate and move into those areas. So I'm going to stop because I really don't have an expertise on it, but I did see a lot of really positive movement in that direction. I was happy to see the Star Bonds bill passing and get that renewed. And I liked the changes that were made in that bill. Hopefully, I know that Manhattan's working on some things, and hopefully we'll get progress for Manhattan again on Star Bonds. So.
Thank you. Representative Hyland, and then we'll go to Representative Dodson.
Thank you, sir. Our Commerce Committee worked very hard throughout this entire session, rapid fire, actually, with the Star Bonds and all that. And then I believe it was Mike that actually put in a clause within the Star Bonds that allowed it to be used for rural areas. Decrease the thresholds and so forth. And so that was an excellent item, in my opinion, that we put in there. So it's not just limited to the high population districts and where all the money is. So we were able to help out some other areas to include Manhattan with that change. Do I believe it's bipartisan? I do. And I will say publicly that I think Tolan is doing a pretty darn good job. He has worked with our committee throughout the entire process. We fired many, many questions in their direction. They answered them all. They've worked with us closely on language. And his legislative liaison, Sofer, was in every meeting. I visited with him in my office, in the hallways, and everywhere else during this whole process. So I think we did some really good work in that committee this year. And we've passed out some things that will help not only the Commerce Committee, but businesses in general and for the future of Kansas. Many of us on the committee were very concerned about the return on investment of any of these things that we do. And the Commerce Committee and the Secretary understands that, now Lieutenant Governor, get hard. You have to put dashes and slashes in. He's carrying too many hats. But anyway, they are aware of the committee's concerns in that area. And they're coming back to us with information. They've been very open about it. And so I think it's going along well, and we will keep an eye on it, and they're very willing to work with us. So I think it's good.
Thank you, Representative Hyland. We'll go to Representative Dodson and then conclude with Senator Hawk.
I'll just kind of echo what Ron said. I've been very encouraged. I didn't know quite what to expect from the administration when they came in to testify or to consult. But both Secretary Toland and Mr. Sulphur have been great. We've got Trent Armbrust, obviously, who's always in the back of the room and very knowledgeable, particularly for the things that go on here in the Manhattan area. On the OMB thing, when we were talking about amendments to the initial bill, the OMB raised the definition of a metropolitan area from 50, or at least they're considering it, from 50 to 100,000. And we just wanted to make sure that Manhattan, who's kind of about the 55,000 area, didn't get left off. And the other one, they've got kind of a new definition that they want that takes care of those below 50,000. So we just wanted to carve that out to make sure we didn't get lost in the shuffle. And the danger is not in what OMB does, but in all of those other agencies that fund based upon the OMB definitions. So hopefully all of that can be clarified. And I know the secretary is working hard on that. You know, there is a lot of great information and initiative in the in Secretary Tolan's framework for growth. The thing that I have tried to help influence there is that our needs are both mechanical and image-based. In other words, to get people to come to Kansas, we've got to work hard on making sure that everybody likes to come to Kansas, and those that are in Kansas appreciate the greatness of Kansas. When you look at some states that surround us, maybe not right next to us, but certainly if you look at Texas and the funding that they have for their Department of Commerce, we've got to do better there. I mean, you can't just sit and hope. You've got to do things that really are going to cause a difference in the way people feel about the state. You know, we've been considered a flyover for a long time. I mean, that's ugly, but it just means, why would you want to come here? And we have so many great things. We've just got to do a lot of great marketing and then some structure to put around that to make sure it comes true. One of my big concerns is over rural Kansas. You know, if you fast forward, I mean, for all of us, but particularly for rural Kansas, fast forward for 15 or 20 years and try to figure out how we're going to sustain Western Kansas, an integral part, not only of the state of Kansas, but of our culture. You know, if you look at farmers and ranchers who have been the backbone of United States of America since its founding, I just don't know how we're going to get with automation, robotics, artificial intelligence, all of those things that are influencing our farmers and ranchers out there in the West, and how we're going to stabilize those already small towns. You can just see that over the years are getting smaller and smaller. The need for people to work on those farms is getting less and less. So we're going to have to really figure that out so that it's not all just remote. We're going to have to make some stepping stones for people to go from where they are to where they need to be in the future. And so, yeah, this is probably one of the most interesting elements that we're going to be dealing with for the next few years, is how do we position Kansas for greatness in the future. Thanks. Great.
Thank you very much, Representative Dodson. Senator Hawk, if you have any thoughts to conclude that, and then you stay on because I'm going to start with you on the next question.
Okay, I hope it's an easy one. No, I appreciate hearing what my colleagues have said. My biggest concern or fear, after the 2008 recession, Kansas, in terms of our politics and government, just sort of constricted. We did a huge tax cut. As Secretary Tolan has said, the Commerce Department was really decimated. I think it was 23 years since we had an economic development state plan. So he revitalized the framework for growth. I just think we have to be really careful. I don't think we're out of the woods yet. And it looks like our revenues, we got a good consensus revenue estimate. Our caseloads are down. It looks like revenue's up. But the governor's saying we have to have a sustainable budget. And I think part of all of that is making sure that and Mike said this clearly too, we need to keep our investment in commerce. We lost our national presence, our international presence in terms of being effective. I just talked to Lieutenant Governor Tolan on Tuesday, and one of the themes is how do we keep our young people here after we educate them? And clearly one of the ways we do that is supporting our K-12 and higher ed, but let's make sure we bring jobs in here. They need to have good high paying jobs. I think they want to stay here if they know that they have an economic future. And so we didn't have the tools got decimated. So having HPIP and the angel investors, we also have a job creation fund, had to fight for that last summer. We used that all up in terms of recruiting people. And my colleagues on the Joint Budget Committee were really hesitant to even put another $5 million into that. Finally, we did. We've got federal dollars coming, and we did create the Office of Broadband Expansion. What I'm told is the Biden administration and I suspect Congress are going to have some broadband things. I think our future is whether or not we have our highways, but also our broadband highways. And so all of that's an investment. And I just hope our voters and those of us who are legislators don't decide we've got to constrict that kind of key investment that keeps the same disaster happening. I sort of am not sure we're not going to have a little recession as a rebound on this, maybe not as likely now that things are getting a little bit back to normal and people are wearing masks more and we've got the vaccine. So things are certainly looking brighter, but I don't want for a minute to think that we need to take the foot off the gas pedal in terms of our economic development.
Thank you, Senator. This will be our last question, and it really starts out with a statement or a comment of thanks. The university community is a very important part of the overall makeup of our area and our region. And so on behalf of all of higher ed and especially the state universities that have engineering schools, thank you to our legislators for renewing the University Engineering Act. On that note, as we move into the omnibus process, would you comment on higher ed funding? I believe there's still a couple of things out there, and I'm not sure if they've all been agreed to or if they've at what level they've been discussed in the first series of meetings, both in the Senate and House committees. But I know there's still some natural gas payments out there potentially. $10 million or fully restore the 5.5%. Anything related to higher ed funding? We'll start with Senator Hawk and move to Senator or Representative Carlin. I just gave you a promotion, Representative Carlin, because both of those legislators are on the budget committees, and then we'll allow Representative Hyland and Dodson to make any comments. And if you go quickly, we might have time for a 1 minute final statement from each of you.
That's not an incentive. I'm looking forward to omnibus. I have some trepidation. We managed on the Senate side to get $25 million in, a little more than the House in the mega budget. It wasn't quite enough. It still doesn't get us up to what the allotment did, even though the governor did reinstate. We used some COVID money, but the governor did reinstate for the next budget year some of that allotment cut. But we really needed somewhere between $33 and $38 million. We only put 25 in, and that's what was agreed to. I think I'm not often in at odds with the Board of Regents policy decisions, but I know they want to take care of deferred maintenance, but I think that the universities need that money, that $10.3 million for operations. And just on Tuesday, I had asked about, well, you know, we're the Lieutenant Governor talked about the money we're putting in to help municipalities and some businesses with what happened to them with their utility bill spikes. I think K-State has over $4 million that our gas bill spike, and the Regents as a whole, it's over $10 million, and it hit some of our big universities much harder than it did Fort Hays and Emporia. So I think we need to honestly look at that and help that out too. We have a big hole, and fortunately there are some federal dollars coming, but most of those federal dollars are not going to the operational piece where the university has lost revenue. And I'd like to see us, you know, again, here I am, I'm pretty conservative on spending, but our revenues are up and caseloads are down, so we have more money there. I don't want to leave our universities out of that. We just talked about economic development, and I think the best thing Kansas has going for economic development is our K-12 and higher ed system.
Thank you. Representative Carlin, follow-up comments on higher ed funding?
Yes, thank you. I don't know. I was trying to remember the details of all that, how that happened, but the governor had recommended $10 million for pay raises, I believe, for university, and it came through our committee, and it was changed to either in the Senate or the House. That came back to us as using that for scholarship money. And then it was changed again to deferred maintenance, which was debated in Appropriations Committee, and the Regents Director, Blake Flanders, was in the room, and he agreed that, you know, that they could use that money for, it could be useful, I think was probably how he would have said it, but he was nodding his head. So my committee agreed then to get that money to the universities for deferred maintenance. It looked to me like we were going to lose it totally. So it's been an awkward situation, and the governor line item vetoed that, and that she wanted that for pay raises. Pay raises were excluded totally, apparently, by the Senate, and it's in our omnibus plan. All of the state employee raises are put off to the omnibus bill. And so we're still going to try to maintain, as a House position, 2.5% of pay raises for employees. And absolutely, higher education, Manhattan is higher education. And we're talking about the MSA changes. Most of the communities that would be affected, well, no, not, that's not a good statement. I'm sure many of the communities that were affected by that are university communities that we, you know, have contact with. We either maybe play football with or whatever. So those are the midtown, you know, mid-sized communities that are the backbone of our country. And our education is, they are where we're, a lot of those that are affected by the MSA changes, our education communities. We really need to get behind that change to protect us as a community, so we can continue to support education here better in Manhattan. I'm sad that we didn't do better for higher education, and I hope we can continue to find ways to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlin. Representative Hyland, any comments? And then Representative Dodson, we'll let you wrap that up.
Well, thank you. This is an important issue because I represent one full county and parts of four others. That includes three universities. So I hear about this issue quite a bit. K-State, Emporia, and Washburn. And it's a very important issue. I think the committee needs to work hard to try to figure out a way to increase that funding the best they can. And the area that has, and I've been visiting with Secretary Tolan on this about the skilled labor force. It's a very important issue in our area. And unfortunately, the technical schools, community colleges, all under the Regent system, their funding is directly affected in this as well. But this is an area that entire state, they're all claiming we need more skilled workers and all of that. Manhattan Tech has expanded, as you know. They now have a campus in Wamego. And we're working on a deal to increase funding for them from a local perspective. And if that all comes true, then by the end of this year, by no later than January, they will have expanded their entire campus over here to include welding, electrical, automotive, everything. It's a really good deal, and it's a good way to keep these kids in the area. So I'm acutely aware of it. We're looking at it on the other end, or the lower end, let's say it that way, the community colleges and technical schools. And I think with some effort, we can get that done.
Representative Dodson.
And somehow I lost my cursor there for a minute, so couldn't get it back on to unmute. You know, if you look at this over time, we may have to have a relatively major focus on this over the next couple of sessions. But over time, moms and dads and kids have had to pay an increasingly larger share in tuition, and the state has paid less and less. So a fundamental evaluation of whether that fits for Kansas is probably a good idea. The other thing that I think we have to keep in mind, that I know KSU and Wichita State, probably to a slightly lesser extent, except for the medical center at KU, these organizations bring in a tremendous amount to the state of Kansas through research. And I think that they need to be appropriately compensated for that, so that it's a little bit difficult to watch some of the cuts. And maybe to start with, we can maybe have the funding that is provided to them a little bit more fungible. I mean, that would have avoided the argument over whether we pay raised or whether it was going to go for backlog maintenance and those kind of things. But these universities and tech schools are a big deal to the state of Kansas. They're arguably one of the three or four things we really have going for us. So I just wrapped that up in the interest of time.
Thank you very much, Representative Dodson. And thank you to all of our Manhattan area legislators.